and leaving behind the leopard arms and armor, we made our way through the Emperor crypts and more generic catacombs, reversing the path we'd taken and I'd mapped out. No one said a word for a long stretch. There was only the clomping of feet and heavy breathing. But I knew if anyone had a comment, it would be Vindoro. He was ahead of me and turned to Rudgy as we rounded a corner.
"He was a right proper giant bastard. Mean, belligerent, nasty piece of work. Sure is spit nasty. But this... Just never figured is all. A tower mate. Plague me."
He shook his head. Rudgy kept pace but didn't respond. But I said, "Is it really that strange?" They both glanced back at me, and I continued, "What I mean is, the Sildoon are sort of experts at infighting, aren't they? Betrayal is something of second nature. Is it so strange that as Morgan would?" Rudgy replied,
"Gods, but you don't know anything. Towers betray towers, Arky. Natural order of things. That's how the Sildoon function. You can barely even call it betrayal."
Vindoro said,
"But tower mates, the men you hung with, fought with, squabbled with, doesn't matter whether you hate the bastard next to you or not. He's your brother."
"Or sister," Rudgy amended.
"Or sister. You defend your tower mate to the death, against any and all."
He sounded forlorn just talking about it.
"And before you ask, it ain't just a jackal thing, it's a tower thing. True for eagles or leopards or serpents or wheels or whatnot. The tower is everything. You obey your commanding officer, you obey your tower commander, and you fight for your tower mates, no matter plaguing what."
Rudgy agreed through tight lips.
"No matter plaguing what?"
I watched the lantern light flicker over the countless bones as we passed the compartments and rounded another corner.
"Has a jackal ever?"
"No,"
Vindoro said. "Never. Not plaguing ever. Not until that giant horse son nearly killed Cap. Wish he had died slower. A lot plaguing slower."
"Aye, Lieutenant," Rudgy said. "Bastard got off easy."
They seemed intent on not naming as Morgan at all. I looked at racks of skulls, alternating with vertebrae, in an arrangement that might have been called aesthetically pleasing. If it had been a mosaic, and not the remains of the dead. Stymieing a shiver, I said, "And what of Sofjian and Skilana's betrayal, wresting control of the Memordons, and breaking the frame?"
Vindoro replied, "No clue. Mem's always been controlled by the towers, and then Sinead, hoping for Thumar next, but with no masters to answer to. Who plaguing knows?"
He didn't stymie a shiver, and Rudgy started to say something, but Maldus had heard enough, shouting,
"Shut your plaguing holes, the lot of you!"
He was clearly angry. There was something else there as well. Hate? Fear? Fury for allowing himself to feel uneasy over unshackled memory magic? I imagine he would rather face a freed Ripper on his own, with no weapons, than engage a Memordon now. While Asmorgon's mutiny had thrown the Jackal's concepts of tower and self wildly off balance, it could be written off as an aberration. But the prospect of the Memordons being truly free, operating independently, unchecked, creating their own agenda for the first time in history, that seemed to unnerve all of them. With my map, heading back to the Cistern Tower took less time than going the other way, though it was still a matter of hours. We discovered it in exactly the same state as we left it, bloodied, full of bodies, and in total disarray. At least the leopards hadn't discovered it and closed off our escape route. The only real difference was that the eagle Emmert had joined the ranks of the dead, having bled out as he leaned against the wall. It was just as well his towermate was trapped with Bank in the citadel. The captain commanded everyone to raid the larder and pantry once more. "It has been a long day already, but we'll be longer still. Rest a bit and fill your bellies." Muldus pulled the captain aside and pointed towards the door that led to the cisterns.
"Even if we're waiting on dusk, ought to get up to the roof, away from the front door here, Cap. Let's get topside."
Braelar replied. No, Lieutenant. We will have use of the front door. Muldus blinked, though one eyelid wasn't cooperative, and it appeared more of a wink.
Use? What plaguing use? We got to clear out of here.
We do indeed, and that is precisely what I mean to use it for. Muldus looked at the barred door, and then back to Braelar.
What are you plaguing talking about, Cap?
We have to get to Darzac, to let him know what has occurred here, and we will not do that jumping from rooftops. We walk, and to do that, we must needs walk out the front door.
We walk.
Muldus repeated it slowly, still slurring the edges a little.
Out the front door. Down the street. To Jackal Tower, that's what you are plaguing telling me, Cap.
That is precisely what I'm telling you, Lieutenant. Venduro and Rudgy had heard the conversation as well and approached, and Muldus appealed to Venduro.
Never been much good at talking sense into this man. Pretty plaguing lousy at it, in fact, unless Hugh Spear was siding with me. But it's on you now, Ven. Tell Cap here that moseying down the thoroughfare is about the worst plaguing idea you ever heard.
Perhaps just more diplomatic by nature, or more cautious given as Morgan's recent betrayal, Venduro said.
I've heard a lot of lousy ideas. Said a lot of them myself, so it's steep competition.
He looked at Braelar.
Sinead might have lost the Memrodons, but he's still Emperor, leastwise right now. And he'll have us hung without reprieve if we get captured, assuming we don't get murdered good on the spot. So, why are we walking out the front door, Cap?
Braelar looked at us and said,
We have no idea what is happening out there, and we know your sister shat in our soup, Muldus said.
So she did, Braelar replied, biting the words off, and eloquent as always, but we have no idea what effect it has had. Did Sinead's Memrodons abandon him in the middle of battle, or turn on him? Did Thumar's troops, trusting that he was alive and undercutting Sinead, overcome the long odds and defeat the Emperor anyway? We do not know, but even if Sinead proved victorious and is marching back to the capital, he is considerably weakened now, vulnerable, and we will need to inform Darzac and act immediately.
Will our commander make a play for the throne? Will he throw the jackals in a coalition of other towers to seat someone else on it? We simply do not know. But Darzac cannot operate blindly, and won't. He will wait until he has obtained intelligence. And I do know we are the only ones who can supply it, yes? So we perform our duties, aid our tower, and see our way through this, no matter how we have been betrayed or how frayed the original plan is.
The captain looked at all the jackals still alive.
So, unless you have some pigeons in your packs that can carry word to our commander, we resort to the one recourse we still have available. Our feet. That is why we walk out the front door.
Muldus wasn't one to talk with his hands much, but he did just then, waving one around as if trying to dispel a stench.
Fine. Somebody can. Just send a runner.
Rudgy smiled. I'll go. Got nothing better going on just now.
You most certainly will not, Sergeant, Braelar replied. He looked at Muldus. I am down enough officers as it is, but more importantly, while we can get word to the man, do you really believe Commander Darzac is going to believe a runner who tells him our company made the critical mistake of trusting my sister, and we're all betrayed on the cusp of securing Thumar his throne again? So now all Memrodons are free to do gods know what?
You might have noticed the one Sinead assigned to your tower slipping away quietly. Oh, and Thumar's dead. Our apologies and regrets. As is the vile whoreson Lieutenant Asmorgon, who tried to strangle Captain Kilcoyne and organized impromptu mutiny with the Eagles, who will surely be our enemies now if word gets out that we led Thumar to an ambush. Is that what you intend our presumptive runner to say to Commander Darzac? Assuming the good commander hasn't also been struck down by the unbound Memrodon in his employ.
Venduro said.
He's got a point, Mol.
Muldus ground his jaws together.
Gods and devils, but we're in a bad spot.
Yes, Braelar said. On that point we definitively agree. But we cannot afford to make it worse by delaying or taking half measures now. We must get to Darzac immediately to verify his safety and to inform him of what has occurred, so we can plot our way clear of this, yes? Grudgingly, Muldus nodded.
We go out the plaguing front door, fine. But how about this? When we get close to Jackal Tower, we send a runner ahead.
Braelar started to object, but Muldus pushed on.
Not to deliver the plaguing news, but to make sure we ain't walking into a worse situation. Get the lay of the land, and if Darzac is alive and kicking, like we all hope, then the rest of us follow.
Braelar nodded. Very good. Now get some sustenance. But quickly. We leave soon. Muldus walked away, shaking his head, scowling, looking more likely to chew stones than food. Vindiro said,
You don't have to tell me twice. Come on, Sergeant. Grub.
Grudgy looked at him in amazement as they walked towards the pantry.
You eat like a plaguing deserter, but you're barely bigger than Arky there. Queerest thing. What's queer is how plaguing hard it is to find a boiled egg when you want one. Really shouldn't be this plaguing difficult.
Even exhausted and starving, I couldn't suppress a smile. There was a man who lived in the moment. Chapter 45. True to his word, shortly after we'd stripped off any leopard paraphernalia and eaten something, Braelar had us assembled by the door. I'd thrown some oatcakes and the salvageable parts of a wrinkled apple down my throat and followed it up with a small beer, so I felt halfway human again. But the heavy tension and lack of sleep made me want to just find a spot on the floor with the fewest blood splatters and fall into the deepest pit in my mind that I could manage. I had a weary revelation then that waking and dreaming were like the drain lake in Roxtiniac, one ever flowing into the next in an endless, mysterious, inexplicable cycle. Two jackals pulled the bar clear of the brackets on the door, and Braelar looked at Rudgy.
Send two out. Take stock of the street and surrounding area. Ascertain what they can, and report back.
She nodded and walked over to the soldiers by the door, talking quietly to two of them. My heart was hammering hard when a jackal pulled the door in, giving the pair enough space to slip out, and closed it behind them. Perhaps nothing had changed out there in the streets of Sunrak at all, but too many momentous things were happening, and it was impossible not to imagine the horrible ripple today's events would have. The rest of us waited. And waited. And waited some more. Finally, they knocked on the door five times and were let back in. They walked up to the captain and the shorter scout said,
Way seems clear enough, Cap, but rumors are flying wild. Overheard soldiers and ovations. Some are saying Sinead rooted Thuma on the field and had the old wolf's head on a pike. Which were impossible, him being dead back there in the tower and not having lost his head at all. Others are saying Sinead was the one who got crushed.
Braelar asked, And what of Thumar's allies in the field, the Injurians, the Vortigoi Confederacy? The short scout replied,
Some say they were destroyed. Others claim they got wind things were turning, thought of somewhere safer to be, and let out. All I know now is, not knowing who is emperoring, or what's happening with the Mems, that the Vaishans are getting right panicky, smelling blood in the air, heading indoors, bolting their doors.
Braelar nodded. Yes, as they should. While they often get the narrative wrong, the Vaishans have been under Sildoon rule long enough to have a sense of when things are about to erupt, and historically have been fairly accurate in predicting bloodletting. He looked at our small group. Out we go, then. We do not draw weapons unless a threat presents itself. Whether Sinead is alive or dead, the leopards do not know we have returned yet. They likely discovered the bodies in the citadel, but will just as likely assume it was a coup attempt by the eagles. Still, we do not have much time, so we nonchalantly but fairly quickly make our way to Jackal Tower to see what we see. Understood? The jackals all nodded or said aye, and I found myself echoing them. Then the door was opened again, and we filed out. I half expected to see the city on fire or madness reigning as tower battle tower from street to street. Instead, it was eerily quiet. Dusk was coming on, the sky gray behind the charcoal clouds like a huge tattered and torn flag draped over the world. During any normal day, we still would have seen Thervations heading to their homes, merchants closing up shops, men heading to a tavern or brothel or theater for some form of entertainment, some filing towards the gates before curfew was called. But except for a few stragglers darting inside some hiding place, we didn't encounter any of the native inhabitants, and there was a tension in the air. And for the first several streets, we didn't see Saldun soldiers of any tower either. It was as if the city of Kuz was holding its breath, dangerously still, and it felt like we were walking among the catacombs again. That was unnerving, but at least it meant we made quick progress. And then, almost at once, things changed. Rudgie and another scout who had been checking the streets ahead returned from different directions at the same time. Rudgie said, "There's a battalion ahead, smallish but a lot bigger than us. Couldn't tell which tower, though. They were moving fast, harried by another group." Braylar pulled Bloodsounder off his belt and adjusted the straps on his shield as he looked over his shoulder at our small company. "The order to walk unarmed has been rescinded." I slid the curved blade out of the scabbard, careful not to slice myself or anyone around me. The captain asked Rudgie, "How many streets ahead, and heading which direction?" As if in answer, we heard the distant sounds of battle and shouting as Rudgie said, "Four or five streets, moving west, so not hard to skirt around them. Let the smaller group retreat and make our way behind the bigger." Braylar turned to the ginger-haired scout. "And you, soldier? Let me guess. Grim tidings as well, yes?" The jackal nodded quickly, starting straight ahead, looking uneasy. "Aye, Grim and Grimmercap. Saw a party near the Tanner district. Shield say Falcon Tower for what that's worth. Though we know blazonry don't always mean shit. About 30, 40 men maybe. Got wiped out. Fast." The way he said "fast" made my skin crawl. Braylar asked, "By which tower?" The scout gulped quickly. "Leopards. But they had it easy, Cap. Real easy." He clearly didn't want to say more, but had no choice. "Two war mems brought the falcons to the knees first. Leopards only had to wade through and slit throats. Finished them quick and kept moving east." Maldus gave Braylar a look that could have been imploring or furious. It was hard to tell, which the captain pointedly ignored. Vinduro said, "Doesn't make any sense, Cap. Falcons support the leopards." "Supported," Braylar corrected. "They supported them, and Sinead in particular. But it appears the Myrmidons were not content with simply throwing off their invisible shackles. They are orchestrating a power move here. So until we know the particulars, we cannot trust anyone outside our own tower." No one mentioned Asmorgon and the fact that even that loyalty might be suspect, as the wound was raw and fresh. But I'm sure it wasn't the only one who thought it. The captain said, "So, we will have to be doubly sure the route forward is entirely clear. Sergeant Rudgie, take 3 more men, fan out, and be sure we do not have any unexpected meetings with Sildun or Myrmidons." After Rudgie ordered jackals to accompany, they set off at a jog, 3 exploring the streets ahead, 1 falling back to be sure no one came up from the rear. Vinduro moved close to Braylar, but I was near enough to hear him say, "Even if we run into another company, Cap, we don't have numbers. But if it's the Mems, then..."
"That is precisely why we have scouts, Lieutenant. And our chances of getting trapped or caught treble if we stand here under an awning arguing. We move. Now."
No one else protested, and we started forward again, winding our way slowly towards the great towers, sometimes having to change direction when one of the scouts returned to report fighting somewhere ahead. Still, it wasn't long before we saw the massive curtain wall around the city and the jackal tower looming above the much smaller buildings and residences around it.
We stopped and sidled alongside a building, waiting for the scouts to investigate the immediate area around the tower to be sure the way was clear. Muldoos moved close enough to the captain that Venduro and I were the only ones who heard him say,
"You know my mind, Cap, and I know knowing it ain't changing yours none, but I've got to say one more time, we ought to hunker down somewhere, cistern tower maybe, exposed out here, real plaguing exposed. And I don't like this one plaguing bit."
Braelar drummed his fingers on the haft of the flail. "What is to like, Lieutenant? A deposed emperor is dead, a sitting emperor very likely could be, some of our own turned against us, and the Myrmidons severed 1,000 years of Sildoon control as easily as cutting a single throat. But our tower still exists, and I would learn what state it is in, and if our commander yet lives." Muldoos didn't have a direct answer for that, good or bad, and simply rubbed the back of his neck several times with his big hand, pale eyes hard, the droopy eyelid seeming more weighted down than ever. And so we waited, backs against the wall of a granary as night came on. Then Rudgie returned. I thought she was alone, but then several jackals stepped out of the shadows after her, 10 or 12. The captain approached them, and the closest soldier saluted and stepped forward. He was a thin man with a round moon face and one chin too many. He said,
"Plaguing glad to see you again, Cap. Sergeant here told me you and your company were back, but good to see it firsthand. Me and the boys thought—"
Then stopped himself when he saw how small our group was.
"Gods, Cap, all the rest—"
"Winnowed." The captain stepped forward. "Report, Sildoon. How do things stand?"
Moonface replied,
"Not good, Cap. Not plaguing good at all."
"Expound. Immediately. Does Commander Darzak live?"
The soldier looked bewildered as he said,
"Aye, Cap. Leastwise last I saw him. Can't speak for the interim, but the mems that used to be ours, then Sineads, well, seems they ain't nobodies now. They just ain't nobodies no more, and—"
"Yes, I am painfully aware of that. What of the commander?"
"They took him, Cap. Him and some of his captains. Captain Griswick, Captain Jolvers, Captain Bickmoss. Those bitches husked and killed their guards, holed them up in commander's quarters. Me and the boys here got out, right as orders come out by way of Jolvers to lock the tower up tight."
"Took initiative, did you?" Braelar asked, eyes narrowing.
The soldier suddenly froze, as if he realized he was standing right next to a hissing viper. The jackal said,
"We made for Otter Tower, Cap. Figure they might lend a hand. Lieutenant Bortness told us to head to the Otters, that is, to see—"
The captain stepped forward, so he was nearly nose to nose with the soldier.
"And did Lieutenant Bortness consider that given that only a handful of Myrmidons are holding your most senior captains and commander captive, it is a reasonable assumption they will not take kindly to your absence, that you are in fact actually risking the lives of your brothers and officers to deliver me this most unwelcome news?"
The soldier could only nod once more, round face bobbing.
"I can't speak for what the lieutenant thought or didn't thought, Cap. Just followed orders. But it made sense, at the time leastwise, until we got to the orders."
The captain rasped.
"Let me guess, that tower was locked down as well, yes?"
Moonface said,
"Aye, Cap, aye, tighter than a priest's—"
"That is all, soldier. Join the others."
Moonface nodded twice, fast, glad to be moving away from another incensed officer, and led the other jackals past. Rudgie approached Braelar, Muldoos, and Venduro.
"Seen the same thing up and down the wall, Cap. Towers are buttoned up. I saw a group of soldiers slipping out the front of the Serpent Tower, but a mem struck down most from a window halfway up. The remainder scattered."
Braelar replied, "If there is one thing my sister's ilk can do well, it is coordinate and communicate immediately. It seems they have adopted the same strategy across all towers. Capture the senior officers, order the soldiers to stand down. A clever, if dangerous, stratagem."
"No one is likely to storm a commander's room, if the Myrmidons did exactly that," I said. "But they also don't have Bloodsounder." Everyone looked at me,
and I resisted the urge to shuffle my feet, as I added. We took the frame tower because the captain was immune to the memory magic, so long as he wielded his flail. Couldn't we do the same in the Jackal Tower? Raid Commander Darzak's quarters? Free him and the others? As expected, Muldus was the first to shoot the idea down.
Oh, yep, sure, easy. If we had an engineer, a squad of sappers, and 6 months to mine under the solid rock beneath Jackal Tower.
I imagined walking through the front door. Muldus replied.
Might as well imagine 10 pretty flying ponies carrying us to the roof. Didn't you hear? Gates locked down tight. Even with a battering ram, you couldn't break it. As it's up all those stairs, no plaguing way in the front gate, Scribbler.
Wouldn't someone inside be willing to let us slip in? Braylar shook his head. The Memmerdons will have one of their own watching the door, Arky. While I applaud your willingness to risk all our lives on a doomed rescue mission, it starts and fails with gaining entry, and that is simply not possible. There must be some way, I said. Isn't there some sort of... what is it called? Postern Gate? Sallyport? Muldus glared at me.
The witches ain't exactly an unfamiliar territory, Scribbler. They know every entry point in the Plaguing Tower, down to the stinking god robes the gong farmers plaguing harvest. Not happening.
I must have inspired Venduro, though. What about the grappling hooks back at the roof of the Cistern Tower? Maybe we could sneak in a window somewhere, get into the tower that way.
And maybe, Muldus said, slurring only a little. We could just throw stones up at a window and get all the witches to poke their heads out at the same time and shoot them in their dumb plaguing faces.
Rudgie shook her head. Lieutenant Mole is right. We clank those hooks against the stones 10 times before getting them to latch. This isn't the lip of the cistern 10 feet above us, and even that took more than one try. And the stones aren't like that deserter keep. Almost no hand or footholds to speak of on Jackal Tower, so climbing just isn't going to happen. If we get in, it'll have to be some other way. Braylar was staring over the rooftops at the visible portion of Jackal Tower, the deserter heads clinking together as he moved Bloodsounder to point with the haft.
It is immaterial. As difficult as entry is, that would be the least of our concerns. Even if we could somehow get inside without raising an alarm, and even if we could somehow sneak up every floor to the commander's chambers, also, miraculously, without alerting the captors, unlike the Memmerdons guarding the frame, these witches will be highly alert, prepared for just such a reckless attempt to free Darzak and the others. And you can be sure that my sweet sister has alerted them to the properties of this flail, on the very remote chance I would be a large enough idiot to attempt just such a foolish rescue. So they would not waste time trying to bring me down with any memory magic. What's more, you surely recall that we had Skilana helping to confuse them in the frame room as well. No, we will not take them unawares twice. They would strike anyone else down with memory magic, and me with very mundane weapons. But even if I somehow got close enough to slay even 2 or 3 Memmerdons, you can be sure one hanging back would be more than willing to cut down the commander and the other captains. He turned and looked at all of us. As much as I would love to rescue the commander and free the jackals, it will not be here or now. Through clenched teeth, he said. Until a better possibility presents itself, we must withdraw. Muldus slapped his meaty thigh.
About plaguing time.
Where to then, Cap?
Venduro asked, sounding and looking as tired as I felt.
Holding up somewhere in Sunrak?
Impossible, the captain replied. Sofjin told me to run, and I suspect she actually intends to let us, but she cannot delay tracking us long.
Muldus said.
That cunt's got nothing good for us, unless she betrayed the whole Empire, and she'll blast our skulls open or see us hanging from our entrails the first chance she gets.
Braylar gave him a long, unreadable look.
You are incorrect on one point, Lieutenant. Sofjin can track nearly everyone here, and her bind to me is incredibly strong, much as I wish it were otherwise. She can sense I'm still in Sunrak, even now, I'm sure of it. and while she is no doubt busy conducting the largest coup in history this moment, if she wanted us dead today, she could snap her fingers and make it happen. But you can be sure our grace period will run out very soon, so we have to leave Sunrak. Tonight.
Reggie said. But the bridges are hauled in, and the gates shut tight, Cap. Nobody's leaving through the gates tonight, and probably not any time soon.
Sometimes it was difficult to catch the twitch smile in the sunlight, and twice as hard in the dark. But I felt certain I saw it. I never said we were walking out the gates, did I?
It took everyone a moment to realize what he meant, and then Muldus groaned, and Vinduro said,
Cap, your sister knows how we came in. Sure as spit she'll have posted guards at the cisterns by now.
Not if she truly is offering us one chance to escape.
But why would she do that, Cap? Mole is right. Doesn't make any plaguing sense.
Braelar replied, The draining lake of Roxtiniac is less mysterious than the inner workings of a woman's mind, Lieutenant, and none are more perplexing than my sister's. I make no boasts about divining the meaning there, but she is giving us a small opportunity, and we will seize it. He clapped Vinduro on the back. At least we will be leaving a city without having to kill everyone first, yes?
Then Braelar looked at Reggie.
Guide us back to the cisterns, Sergeant, and be sure we do not run afoul of any patrols or inexplicably homeless Sildoon roaming the streets. Once there, take three men inside and be sure there are no traps awaiting us.
She nodded and set off into the shadows with the other scouts. My legs wearier than at any time I could remember, I followed the captain and his retinue back to the cisterns and the aqueduct that connected them to the outside world.
Chapter 46. After navigating our way through the streets and avoiding one other battle between rival factions, and being assured by Reggie and the scouts that the cistern tower was as bloody as we left it, but still very much deserted, as Braelar predicted, we made it to the roof. The prospect of another all-night crawl through the aqueduct was daunting, and my muscles already quailed at how grueling it would be. But the captain assured us that we wouldn't have to hunch our way the entire stretch back up into the foothills and the abandoned mine. Once we were a mile or two out from Sunrak, we could descend and make our way through the darkened hills by foot. That was something. A slightly less exhausting and odorous something, but something, just the same. After allowing us a small break to fill our bellies and briefly rest, it was time to leave Sunrak yet again, albeit by the most underused road possible. The descent down the rope ladder was uneventful. It would have been far more eventful if Vinduro hadn't grabbed my belt, as I nearly lost my balance and plunged to the stone streets below. We got on our bellies again. The jackals drew their sirocas to ward off any other hungry bull crabs, and we started crawling. Thankfully, we didn't have to kill any of those either, as we made our slow exit from the city of Kuz, never more aptly named than this day. Occasionally, the sounds of some combat floated up from somewhere, but distant and infrequent now that it was deep into the night again. Whoever resisted was either cut down or determined to carry on the fight once the sun returned. I felt the emptiness of the trench beneath me, and then we were back on our feet, trudging forward, backs aching, eyelids heavier than stones. In the deep dark of the aqueduct, it was so incredibly tempting to simply sit down and lean against the wall, listening to the water gurgle past as I closed my eyes and didn't open them again for 3 days, but the captain drove us on. True to his word, once we got to the first access station, a scout climbed out and checked the terrain, and when we got the signal it was clear, we all followed, taking the built-in stone ladder down to the earth below. After seeing nothing for such a long stretch but the utter blackness of the aqueduct, the stars above looked radiant, brighter than torches, and the cool night air was a welcome and refreshing change from being forced to smell nothing but our own stink and the stale air trapped inside. The ability to stand up straight was also an undeniable relief. I was still exhausted, but we were clear. There was always the chance some mounted Sildoon might show up at any moment and kill or capture us, but for the moment, we were free. Breelar led us on through the night, one foot after another as we traversed the hills, keeping the aqueduct in sight, but ourselves as hidden as the infrequent trees and brush allowed. The next miles went quicker than the ones in the aqueduct had, but we still moved slowly and cautiously, partly to be as quiet as possible and avoid detection, and also to prevent anyone turning or breaking an ankle on the uneven ground in the dark as we put one tired foot in front of the next. When we finally sighted the mine, I exhaled so deep and long I felt like it might never stop. And when I overheard the captain send a runner ahead to let the remaining jackals know we were coming and not to shoot us, I nearly wept. I'd feared he was going to order us to saddle our horses and ride to some other site. And when Muldoose asked him why we didn't, the captain replied, "My sister is not coming for us, not yet at least. But if she chose to, riding 10 or 15 miles further would not prevent her from tracking us. We would have to ride through the Godvale to prevent that, which it might come to yet, but not tonight." I expected the lieutenant to grumble and growl a bit, as he was wont to do. But he had to have been as weary as I was, because while he clearly didn't agree, it didn't seem he had the energy to argue. We walked the remaining distance to the abandoned mine, and though it was a rocky bed, I'd never been happier to lay my head down to sleep in my entire life. Dawn came and went without anyone shaking me back to life, as did noon. It was only midday when I felt Venduro's hand on my shoulder, and finally woke, ravenous, disoriented, and hoping it was all a mad dream, that maybe we hadn't even taken the aqueduct yet, that the deposed emperor was alive still, a jackal hadn't turned on his own, and the Myrmidons hadn't captured or killed every significant leader in the capital city, and quite possibly all the provinces where towers resided. But one look on the young lieutenant's face dispelled that notion immediately. While he must have gotten some rest as well, he had the dark circles and haunted look of someone who also felt like he was stuck in a nightmare, or feared falling back into one. He tried a half-smile as he handed me a hard heel of bread that must have been soaked in bacon fat hours earlier, as even cold, it tasted like something fit for an emperor. I tore into it as he handed me a flask of warm water, also tasting far better than it had any right to. Venduro squatted beside me as he said, "Rough going the last day or two, eh?" I nodded and spit crumbs as I said, "Rough going," wondering if he could understand either word. After taking another swig, I tried again. "What are we going to do now?" Venduro spun a pine cone in the dirt. "That, Arky, is one plaguing tough question that's got no kind of answer at all, or none cap saw fit to share with me. I expect he'll give us our marching orders soon enough." He looked around at the abandoned and rusted equipment. "Unless he figures we're going to take up mining, then it'll be digging orders. Though after yesterday, can't say that that would be the worst idea ever." I looked over at the other jackals gathered nearby, all looking uneasy, anxious, and for the first time, not very Saldunian. It was one thing to be driven out of their home city by a rival faction and to see their brethren who couldn't make it in time cut down on a bridge. As awful as it was, that was at least somewhat familiar territory. But this was something else altogether. Not unlike crossing the Vale for the first time. They had no idea what lay ahead, or how poorly they might be equipped to handle it. Rudgy walked over and said, "Sorry to interrupt the feast, but Cap wants us all to attend. Well, the officers and you, Arky. Come on." Venduro stood and dusted his hands off on his trousers. "Time to get marching. Or digging." He forced a smile, but it was weak and unconvincing. We both followed Rudgy away from the mine, and in the same general direction as where she and I had our brief, but all too memorable encounter, what felt like another lifetime ago. I wondered if I truly pleased her, if there were any chance of it ever happening again, and then cursed myself. Breelar was standing, pacing slowly, and Muldoose was sitting on a fallen tree, apparently transfixed by the pale hairs on the back of his hand. There was another somewhat familiar jackal leaning against the tree, looking up at the slowly passing clouds as if watching the most magnificent galleons on the most fantastic sea imaginable. The captain stopped pacing as we navigated around the trunks of some thin weeper pine and watched us until we joined them in the small glade.
"Well, our council has grown small indeed."
Braylar looked at us, and then over to the other officer.
"You remember Sergeant Bresnik, of course? Well, perhaps not Arky. Arky, the sergeant. Sergeant Bresnik, Arky."
He looked at Bresnik, eyes looking mossier than usual in the midday sun.
"You no doubt felt slighted not being included in our little raid the other day, Sergeant, but I do hope you count yourself incredibly lucky, for you are."
Sergeant Bresnik stepped away from the tree.
"Not one to question your orders, Cap, but still wishing I'd been there to lend a hand. Never did much like the ogre. Would have been glad to stick him a time or two, chance allowing."
He spit in the dirt.
"I appreciate both the sentiment and the novelty of such fierce loyalty, you can be certain. It is more rare than it should be these days."
The captain waved a hand, inviting us to join the small circle. Sergeant Bresnik gave me a brief, non-judgmental nod, and if he wondered why I was included in the captain's retinue, he didn't ask.
Vinduro asked, "Any word about what happened to that bastard Sinead?"
Bresnik replied,
"Nothing to be said for certain. Looked like he was about to flank and overwhelm Thamar's troops out in the field when he stepped in a big pile of cow shit. All sudden-like, his army halted, lost cohesion, seemed confused or operating under conflicting orders or whatnot. Then it seemed to fray at the seams. The center couldn't hold. Some battalions kept marching on the Confederates and Injurians and Thamar's boys. Some fell back. Others broke off completely. From what you all said, the Mems had something to do with that. But still no word on whether they threw him in chains or offed him right there."
I asked, "How did the battle play out then?" Sergeant Bresnik looked at me, and while it was flat, there was no obvious hostility there.
"There were heavy casualties on both sides, but Sinead had the upper hand. His big forces broke down right when they had things in hand. We figured your plan worked out just like you hoped."
"You figured wrong," Braylar said. "But from what you said, I imagine they did in fact capture the Emperor. Deposed Emperor now. If not, news of his death and the Myrmidon betrayal would have spread like brush fire, and his Imperial army would have been in total disarray. General Krasinios might have been able to rout them even, or at least drive them from the field, victorious. But from what you said, they regrouped after a time and started a guarded retreat back to Sunrak."
"That's right, Cap," Bresnik said. "Some Confederate skirmishers harried them, and the Imperial army, well, Myrmidon now, I reckon, they engaged, slowed down to protect their flanks. But there was no question they were quitting the field."
Muldu said,
"Those cunts are no better than Esmorgon when it comes down to it. But they are 10 kinds of clever, got to grant them that. Bold moves seizing all the leaders. Might not pan out in the long run, but in the short, they grabbed the towers by the jewels, slid a Soroka right close, and dared them to squawk."
Braylar dropped his hand to Blood Sounder, not in a threatening manner, but slowly, deliberately, as if checking a divining rod for signs of an underground stream.
"Is it so very strange they seized this opportunity when it presented itself?"
Vinduro asked,
"What do you mean, Cap?"
"I mean," he said, watching a passing cloud, "are they so very different from every one of our emperors in history? They saw weakness, and methodically took the initiative to pounce. And from their perspective, they are not only power-hungry, but righting a millennium of wrongs, of slavery."
Muldus's good eye nearly bugged out of his head.
"Wait, are you plaguing defending them, Cap?"
"Defending? No. I merely point out that had roles been reversed, had it been us bound to serve with no possibility of release, with no—" Muldus pushed himself off the log, and it creaked under his weight before he rose.
"Those vicious slits have Darzak, the other captains, the other commanders across the whole plaguing empire under the knife just now, and you're plaguing talking about the horse cunt's plaguing motivation?"
Braylar turned and regarded Muldus, but said nothing right away. Everyone seemed to tense up, but then the captain smiled. Not the twitchy kind, or the mocking version, not the mummer's kind as he attempted to win over or plain injurian mark, but the very rare, earnest, and prolonged smile he only favored a staunch ally with.
You are right, Lieutenant. Their motivations do not matter, whether we agree about them or diverge. All that matters is what we do now, which is why you are here.
He looked around our small group, taking us each in turn, and stopping again when he reached Muldus.
You are fond of saying that I seldom solicit your input, and often disregard it even when I do. But I am inviting it now, and will dismiss nothing out of hand. So, while I am not relinquishing my post and will determine our direction, I ask you, what do you suggest, O erudite and practical retinue?
Muldus looked at Venduro.
Is this a trap? Sort of feels like a plaguing trap.
Braylar replied, I assure you, while I am fond of setting traps, this is not one of them. Speak, the floor is yours.
No one spoke at first, perhaps stunned, but then Rudgy said,
Well, we can't stay here, that's for certain. Maybe Sofshin let you flee Sunrak. Maybe she didn't. Another divergent debate, no doubt. But even if she didn't, that's not to say the other Myrmidons will. We have no idea who truly rules right now. But if it's not her, others might press her on our whereabouts.
Vinduro said,
If for no other plaguing reason than to get their witchy hands on Bloodsounder there, the weapon, not the wielder, I mean.
Sergeant Brusnik understandably looked confused, but Rudgy continued,
So we got to get moving. Only question is where?
Muldu sat back down on the creaking tree, his forearms bulging as he steadied himself.
No place far enough. Not if they come hunting. Not unless we got back across that plaguing veil, but we all know what kind of fun to expect on that side.
Vinduro said,
What about trying to find General Krasinios?
Muldus gave him that droopy, but still incredulous look.
Oh yeah, the Eagles would be real plaguing happy to take us in, especially after we explain how we led Thumar into a trap, saw him done in by witches supposed to be helping him retake the throne, and then had to fight off some of his guard to get free of the citadel.
That shut that line of inquiry down in a hurry. When no one else said anything else for a few moments, I cleared my throat and offered,
Muldus, you mentioned the veil, but we don't have to cross over, do we?
He turned the droopy skepticism my way.
We do if we got to run from the witch slits, which we got to do sooner or later, likely sooner. You heard Cap, his bitch sister can track us anywhere, if she has a mind to. Only thing we can do is go far enough to make it not worth their while. At least until we figure out what to plaguing do next.
Braylar gave me one of his calculating looks. In the spirit of hearing things out, explain what you meant, Arky.
Well, I said, we could find a secluded spot near the Vale, hole up there. If the Myrmidons or Myrmidon-led troops come for us, we can cross over if we have to.
Muldu started to object, but I pressed on. Not far into the territory, mind you, for obvious reasons. Just on the other side, but then we'd know if they intend to hunt us down, and it allows the only true means of escape we have if they did.
And if they don't come, Vinduro said,
figuring out where I intended to go. I said, then at least we are still relatively close to Sunrak, to the Jackals, until we gather more intelligence and figure out the next plan of attack. Vinduro grinned, and it seemed less broken this time. Brusnik looked closely at me again and turned to the captain.
I like this skinny bastard, Cap.
Muldus rolled his eyes, well, the one really, as Braylar said. It took him much longer to grow on me, but yes, he is more astute than he looks. Rudgy said,
It's a good idea, but where?
Vinduro tapped the side of his nose.
Got the place, as it happens. Little deserted village north of here 4 days, probably five if we're moving stealthy, called Ondalir, nestled up close to the Vale.
Another plaguing plague village?
Muldus asked. Vinduro replied,
Nah, saw it on patrol years ago, hunting some Aglovian rebels. Hadn't been used at all in half of forever. Overgrown. Only a few stone buildings still standing. Probably cleared out after the veil went up, I'm guessing. It's close enough they must have lost some to the draw of the thing, and got tired of having their own wander on over to the deaths.
Muldus rubbed his stubbly cheek.
Yeah, sounds plaguing lovely. Maybe we could grow some peonies and raise rabbits.
Wasn't saying we ought to settle down there, Mull, Vinduro said. But you want a place not on any map, close to the Vale, affording the kind of escape only Cap there can provide. You'd be hard-pressed to find a better site.
Braelar said, if you have any objections or better suggestions, I would hear them now. Modus looked like he was ready to roll out some more rebuttals, though out of pure habit or pique it was hard to tell. But then surprisingly held his tongue, shrugging his big shoulders.
Heard lousier plans.
A resounding endorsement, the captain said, before turning to the others. Anyone else? Other alternatives? Critique? Asinine remarks?
After another few moments of silence, Braelar slapped the buckler on his belt.
Very good. It is settled then, yes? To the abandoned village at the edge of our world.
Put like that, I wished someone else had objected. But once settled, the captain was not easily unsettled.
Chapter 47. We avoided main byways for the first 2 days, winding through sparse woods and along the edges of farmland, but then we joined Carper's Road heading north. I was riding next to Muldus and asked why, and he jerked a thick thumb over his shoulder.
Two words for you, Arky. Bitch. Sister. If she or any of her ilk are after us, no amount of zigzagging or skirting through the brush is going to do any plaguing good, and will only slow us down. We'll make for this weedy hamlet as fast as we can now. Not as much chance of running into patrols now, and scouts are scouting. We're good.
And so we rode for the next 4 days, moving off the small dirt track a few times when a scout brought back word of an approaching wagon, a group of pilgrims, or a small caravan, but otherwise undisturbed. There were no troops ahead or behind, Sildoon, Confederate, or Injurian. We made camp. Muldus continued leaving welts up and down my body as we trained, slightly less numerous than before, though my welts had welts, so it wasn't much of an improvement. And I listened to the soldiers. The sense of malaise was heavy, partly because we were a much smaller group than when we had escaped Sunrak the first time, and partly because we had a mission then, an objective, a sense there was still something worth moving forward to. Now, there were only questions and uneasiness. It was mid-morning on the sixth day when Vinduro led us off the rutted road and through the sparse woods for several hours. Rudgy took another rider ahead to be sure the area was safe and not housing bandits, rebels, or any other troublesome occupants. We watered and rested the horses and waited. And 2 hours later, they returned, stating the abandoned village was well and truly abandoned. The sun was still up when we sighted Ondalir, or what remained of it. Winding around trees and 100 yards out, I might not have even known there were buildings ahead. While this region was drier and less green than anything in Injuria, 1,000 years of vines, lichen, weeds, creepers, and moss had overtaken any structure left standing. I expected some stone buildings to have withstood the years. There were manor houses and what looked like a mill, but was surprised to see so many of the wooden ones still admirably bearing the weight of so many centuries. We rejoined a road leading to it that must have been an offshoot of Carper's further north. Squirrels skittered and chattered at us as we passed, and some black quilltails burst out of a small grove to our right and flew off. But we were, without question, the only humans in the vicinity. As we got closer, the road split off around a small plaza and what remained of a fountain near the entrance to the villa. The stones in the plaza surrounding the fountain had been broken up by roots erupting through them, and were covered in the natural detritus of ages. As we circled the round, cracked, and useless fountain, it wasn't hard to imagine that it had once been beautiful, as the enameled tiles inside were still largely undisturbed, and the statue of a fox jumping a log in the center would have looked nearly as good as new, with some maintenance. It appeared a windstorm must have swept through here at some point after the villa was deserted, as the roofs of several wooden buildings had been torn free, and several red tiles from the manor houses were scattered and broken all around the buildings. The structures that had lost some or most of their roofs had suffered considerably, exposed to the elements. Everything inside deteriorated by warp and rot and mold. But again, even after the passage of so many years, it was easy to see that this had once been a thriving and beautiful villa. Before the deserters erected the veil, it was impossible to miss. Not far beyond the edge of the villa, pulsing its way up to the sky, and even 50 yards out, I felt the first tentative tugs, the faint urge to keep riding towards it. Even though I'd seen the veil several times now, it still inspired a terrible kind of awe. This wall of memories spanning the world designed to keep us and our plague on this side. Braelar turned his horse around and pointed back at a manor house we had passed 30 yards back.
"We stay there."
Then he pointed at a stone well off to our left.
"If you cross this marker, you are already too close. As you well know, the veil solicits any and all, and the invitation is a powerful one. We go no closer unless we are penned in by Myrmidons, and even then, you will accompany me. Is that understood?"
There was a chorus of eyes, and the captain said,
"You best get comfortable and clear this place out. We won't be renovating the villa and moving in, but we could be here for a while."
I helped Venduro and several other Saldoon haul out debris from one of the manor houses. Most of the roof was intact, but there were a few holes, and the interior immediately below had weathered poorly, though the frame, timbers, joinery, and overall appearance were remarkably good. It was hard to image this had been abandoned nearly a millennium before, especially since, similar to the plague village we stayed in, there were countless artifacts remaining in Ondalir, things left behind by the villagers who had presumably suffered enough losses to the Vale, and realized that every moment they stayed here put someone else in jeopardy. I imagine they loaded their wagons and horses and oxen with their most important valuables, but left behind a great deal of furniture that had been mostly protected from the elements that was still recognizable. Even the fabric, while faded, mildewed, torn, and no doubt home to 1,000 beetles and spiders over the years, was in fairly good shape when not in the vicinity of the holes above. There were also cabinets, some still filled with dust-caked candlesticks or wooden cups, an empty wardrobe containing the stained and threadbare fabric that had been clothes of some kind, but was largely unrecognizable now, and on, the remains of the terrified populace that vacated and never returned. I was filling my arms with some red shingles and looked over at Venduro. "It's still hard to believe the Myrmidons betrayed Thumar like that. Well, all of you, Saldoon, really."
"Oh, yep,"
he replied, kicking a beam to see how heavy it was.
"The whole business with the frames. Got to hand it to the witches. Mighty manipulative."
I tossed the debris out a window. As I moved over to help him with the other end of the beam, I said, "Well, in that sense, it isn't surprising at all. They don't lack for cleverness." Venduro chuckled as he kicked some shingles towards the wall.
"Aye, sure as spit."
He gave me a long look.
"Been meaning to ask. About Skillana, that is?"
The unspoken question hung there, and I sighed. He started to say something, maybe withdraw the question, but I said, "I wanted to let her suffer. Truly. I thought I would. But I couldn't." He nodded.
"You got a bigger heart than me."
"No," I said. "That's not it. Do you know why I finished her off?" Venduro dusted hands on his pants and looked at me, waiting. I said, "Not to give her mercy. Not really. But because part of me worried that if I left her alive, then Sofjian or some other Myrmidons might return, find a way to save her. It didn't seem likely. But then, neither did the Myrmidons overthrowing Saldoon control with our help. She had caused enough damage, and just then, I hated her, and wanted to be done hating her. So I finished her off." I hadn't expected to admit that to anyone. But there it was. Venduro asked, a small, sad smile on his face,
And how's that working out for you? The not hating part?
I shook my head. Not so good. He patted me on the back, raising dust.
Well, good thing you got some other diversions then, eh?
Other diversions? What? Vindura winked.
At least she's not a Myrmidon. That's something. Even Muldus can't argue with that one.